Okay, I'd say let's start with the introduction into seminar techniques for the seminar and tools for the application of formal methods in software development. My name is Michael Petter, and I'll be the advisor for this seminar. And let's dive right into what we're going to expect. No keyboard working. Now it works. Okay. So first of all, the most important things is probably dates and deadlines. So we will be having this seminar in the style that we will have the talk first and the paper afterwards. This is because we have the kickoff meeting right within the semester now, and you don't have so much time to prepare compared to the seminars that we did last time, so we will do it this way around so that we have a little bit more time to prepare your paper. So we ended up with the following dates. Right now that you know your topic, I don't know, probably you've already checked the web page for your specific topic. Anyway, there's also the exchange possibility at the very last slide then. But anyway, since you know your topic, you can now start with researching the background for this thing. And in order to have a kind of a small feedback round, in order to get whether you go into the right direction, we will have, I will collect the outline of your seminar paper and also your seminar talk at May 11th. So that I can have a short peek into what you're actually going, which direction you're going, and that we might adjust a little bit to what is actually expected of you. Then we will have a common question and answer session for topic research. This is for one part specific to your topic, of course, but for other parts there might be questions for presentation techniques and paper techniques and all that. So this will happen on May 11th. On May 18th. On June 5th, the extended abstract for your seminar paper and the talk slides are due, so that we can have a quick check whether everything is fine just before we will actually have the talk. I think the doodle suggested some date shortly after this June the 5th. And yeah, this will be our final deadline for the talk itself, because we'll be giving the talk then. And then you still have a month to prepare the final version of your paper so that you can once again work on it and improve it with the suggestions that you get from the audience and with feedback that you get from the advisors. Okay, the proceeding for the talk itself is we will have 2 days where we will have talk sessions. Each of these sessions will be will comprise of 30 minutes, where you distribute your extended abstract and have 25 minutes of talk. And we will, since this is an advanced seminar, we will have sharp times, meaning that you will exactly talk for 25 minutes. That's some kind of technique that you should get used to for later on. If you continue in science, this will be a hard limit, and this is a well-known limit for all the conferences and places where you give talks. This is something that you have to learn to prepare for an exact amount of time. Then there's 5 minutes of questions, where we can have feedback rounds, where we will get a little bit of insight in how well you did in explaining your topics, and also comments on what you've told about in the talk. And then at the end of the semester, there will be the full paper due. Okay. Any questions so far for the organization? Okay. So back to the original theme, which is what is the idea of the seminar? Well, the title suggests that it has to do with formal methods and software development. And especially we will concentrate in this seminar on the kind of success stories where formal methods have been successful in contributing to software quality, to software development in general. And therefore, we will have a look at different approaches to bring formal methods to software development. We will, for the specific topic, then introduce the constraints which are in this area, because a lot of these tools are special purpose tools for a certain area in software development. There's special demands when you develop for embedded systems. There are special demands when you develop for security relevant systems. There will be different constraints each time for each topic, and you need to shed light on exactly what kind of constraints are on the programs that you're that your specific topic is talking about. Knocking would have been also an idea. Yeah. And the next thing, now that you have shown the area where the whole approach is applied to, you will show the formal method which is actually applied in this area. This means that you have to introduce into the technique, not only on the surface, but even more in what is happening in the background. What is the key engine of that specific approach? And we have carefully considered different particular topics for you there, and we have tried to find you topics that are actually documented in some form with scientifically founded documentation, like conference proceedings or white papers and all this stuff, which does not keep you away from how it is actually implemented, but which enables you to actually get to know what the methods are that are actually applied. Yeah, and when you have actually explained this formal method, in the sense that you have presented the algorithmic idea that is in them, you can then go back to your setting that you have introduced before and demonstrate what this particular technique can achieve in this area, meaning you can demonstrate then what the expectable benefit is. You can, that depends of course a little bit on the tool, whether it is freely available or not. You can might as well demonstrate what it actually does, or run it at home and then present afterwards what the outcome of the whole thing was. Well, integrate a little bit of feedback into your talk, showing what this has brought to software development that hasn't been there before. Yeah, and at the end, there's of course a little bit of room for evaluating what has actually been achieved by applying this specific particular formal method in software development process, probably also concentrating on the area of focus for this tool. So that is the general idea for the seminar. This should be possible with to achieve with all the topics that we have in this seminar. Certain do's and don'ts. This is not a marketing event. This means that you're not here to sell a specific product, meaning that you don't have to present the marketing slides or something. The idea is really to delve into the approach that is done with your specific tool or utility that you're presenting, meaning that you want to show the people how it actually works in terms of what is the algorithm behind that. That's nothing to do with you can purchase the thing in a per server license or something like that. That's not interesting for us. Also, we are scientists, but not for history. We are no historians. We are not interested in the history of the people that have created the whole thing. We don't have time for that in a 25-minute talk. We want to start right at the beginning with introducing people to the field, the area where the approach is actually meaningful to use. Many of the cases there will be a very special area where a certain property of interest is out there. For example, in avionics software, you need to have a software that always keeps to time limits. So every time a subroutine starts, the programmers must make sure or guarantee that this subroutine A terminates and B terminates in a certain amount of time in order to get the critical limit. And these are special constraints which are specific for real-time environments, especially in cars and planes and all the things that have real-time OSs and real-time properties. Yeah, so these are the things that we want to concentrate on, and so there's no need to get a whole history of what has been done there already. Okay, and the third thing is that you should not just give up by seeing that a few of the tools have a lot of theoretical background. You don't have to explore every corner of what is applied in each of these things, but you should try to get to the point where you get the general engine that keeps those things running. And these engines are, in most of the cases, quite compact and can be quite easily explained. You just need to learn how to read the background literature for this thing. And that is also one of the purposes of seminars in this area, to learn how to read technical reports, to learn how to read scientific papers and all that, and to learn how to filter the relevant things from the irrelevant things. Okay. So what you actually should do is we will be having a scientific talk. So we are actually really interested in complicated stuff. We are in the process of becoming graduates. This is an event which will be taken by mostly advanced students. So we are already quite far in our studies. So don't underestimate either yourself nor your audience. They can cope with quite a lot if you explain it in the right way. This also means that your task, what you should do, is to explain a complex solution, and your major part in the whole thing is to grasp the essentials of this complex approach and sum it up in a way that generic computer science educated audience is able to understand. So you don't have to start from zero. You can assume that people know how to write imperative programs with any Pascalesque or CSG or some dialect like this. So this is a point where everyone already has seen source code. So this is something that you can assume the people to know, and also you know that all of the audience will probably have prepared a talk and a paper on some kind of formal methods-related approach to software development improvements. So there's already a certain amount of background information there, which is quite common for all these types of things. So you don't have to start from the very zero. If you get confused about how much you can assume to be there and how much it will actually be necessary to be explained, then you can come to this question-answer thing and try to clarify about that. And we can decide on which parts of the talk is superfluous and which is really actually necessary. So that's the service in the middle of the whole thing. Okay. Just before we go to the details on how to prepare a good talk, is there any question around? No? Okay. So what should a talk be like? Well, the most common error that we see in a lot of talks in seminars is that people get the misconception that a seminar talk is a lecture. Because they, of course, you see a lot of talks that are given by professors in the context of a lecture. And most of the professors don't prepare any kind of script anymore, but just put everything they say on the slides, and you misuse the slides as the documentation afterwards, or the script afterwards. And that is something that is clearly not the same thing as lecture, as a seminar. In the seminar, we have the chance to separate between a talk and a paper. So you don't have to do everything on the lecture slides. Even more, the central idea of a seminar talk is to actually tell a story. And for storytelling, spoken words are very important. You actually don't have a slideshow and say, and let's see, that's the next slide, and now let's go to the next, and you see all the bullet points on there, and let's go to the next. That's not the idea of a seminar. The seminar should work by telling stories to other people, because that's actually, that will fascinate people, I would say, a quite large deal more than just showing fancy slides, which they need to parse, but you don't have any time to parse. So prepare kind of a speech. Make yourself aware of what you actually want to tell other people. This means that you should not start by let's draw a slide and then come up with the next one and next one. That's not how you do something like that. But the first thing should be to research and think of what the actual core principles of the things that you have found there actually are and how you can explain them to people. And then concentrate on how you can, what kind of things you need people to tell in order for them to understand what your central points in your talk actually are. So that means that you have, at first, you have to identify the core ideas of what you want to tell. And then you have to strategically plan how to bring people to that point where they can actually really comprehend what you mean with these ideas. So you should plan a central theme for your talk and try not to go into many side branches of what might actually be there in the topic. You need to filter out a lot of the side branches and just concentrate on a kind of story arc that you want to present to people. And yeah, so most good talks are actually done in a way that they resemble stories. People tell you from their experiences what they have encountered in software development, for example, and then what they have thought about how to amend the problems that they found, and then they tell you how they did that, and that's the approach for some special formal model, and then they tell you about how this could improve the software in the sense that it solves the problem that they had before with their software. So this would be a typical story for that. Yeah. Then you should, of course, make sure that you do everything in your talks in a way that it actually heads for these core ideas, and of course verify that your concept, your strategies for reaching these core points actually works by giving a test talk to a test audience. Because a lot of times people tend to, in the first place, go for the right direction, but then as they outfit their talk with a lot of more information, they tend to lose the focus on the specific core ideas, and then it's a good idea to have a test audience, which then tries to tell you what your core message actually was, so that you can verify whether people got the whole thing. Slides. On the last slide, I have told you about that your talk should not be slide-oriented, but merely transmitting a story. And you might ask then, why do we need slides at all? And actually, that's a good question. And you should always ask yourself whether you actually need a slide in order to support what you're saying. Because that's the main idea of a slide. You should support what you cannot simply do with telling people. If matters get too complicated, you can try to draw something on the whiteboard or the blackboard or whatever you have there. And especially when these drawings are very complicated and time-consuming and you are constrained with 25 minutes anyway, you might use slides instead. These slides should facilitate things for you in order to get clear drawings to go around problems with handwritten text. Many of us don't have such a nice font when doing handwritten text. Yeah, it should save you time in doing drawings, diagrams, and all that. Yeah, that's what slides are actually quite good for. You should also be aware of that you don't have the same constraints as you have in a written text. In a written text, like in your paper, you try to fit everything into a certain page limit. You don't have such a thing in slides. You can easily do with a quite empty slide, which concentrates on just one idea, and for the next idea you take just the second slide. It doesn't need to be on one slide, at least not from the beginning. Probably there are other constraints, but yeah. So that's also something you should keep in mind for slides. What's actually bad style for slides is, of course, overcrowded slides. Slides that have, in general, a rough idea of slides that are too large are slides with more than 10 lines. It's, of course, only a rule of thumb. So, but in general, slides that have that much lines are already quite full and probably shouldn't be extended too much anymore. Bullet listing. That is also something that is heavily done in lecture slides. Because, well, it's actually your script. But this is something that doesn't need to be on seminar talks. You are here to talk with people, and if people start reading all your bullet lines and you're talking simultaneously the same things, that just doesn't make any sense. Then you could just be muting yourself and just let people read. But that's not the idea. Because people need to be motivated, and you can motivate a whole lot more if you talk to them instead of making them read. So bullet lists are probably not a good idea, except if you need them for documentation purposes, as on these slides here. Then what's also a bad idea is a floating text. That's something that should be clearly in your paper, but not on the slides. People cannot read that much in the speed that you need them for such a seminar talk. So floating text is probably also a bad idea. Overloaded diagrams. A lot of the talks that we had in the past had diagrams, especially from literature somewhere. But these diagrams tend to be from very complex papers, where they try to shed light on a whole lot of details in these in these diagrams, which you won't have any time to present here. So why bother with the complicated diagram? Why not try to draw a simplified version of the same thing and have a much easier time in explaining, because there won't be any questions. But what do you mean with this part in the diagram? That's something that won't happen if you just throw all the superfluous details away and come up with your own diagram that just roughly resembles the one that you have from the background. And it's easier than you actually think if you use a generic drawing program. I've had really good experiences with something like that. Yeah, and also, reproducing every detail you say is also not the purpose of the slide. You should use it for support reasons mainly. So, we are reaching the point where the talk is actually finalized and ready to be given to other people. You should concentrate on right before is that you should prepare for the actual presentation. That means that you please take the slides with you in PDF format on some kind of USB key. I know this is boring, but this gets neglected a lot, and people tend to mess up with their computer configuration quite a lot. And even though everything works at home, it just does not work at the seminar room. So having a backup is always a good idea. Next point is testing your equipment at home. That's a thing you should definitely do. Please make sure you have a kind of VGA port on your laptop, if you want to use your own laptop, and make sure that you can configure it in a way that you can actually do your presentation comfortably. There's a lot of people fiddling around with mirroring and splitting between monitor and beamer, and it's very seldom that it just works out of the box if you have never tried it before. So please exercise something like that. You can have the room unlocked for this purpose beforehand, so you can just pay me a visit in my office, and I will unlock you the room if it is free, and you can just try. That is something that you should definitely do. And please don't fiddle around with widescreen, 4:3 screen configurations. The one resolution that is really standard everywhere is 1024 times 768. And that is sad that it's still the standard, but it's the standard that every presenter will be able to deliver to you. And if you prepare with this aspect in mind, then everything should be fine. The talk itself has a sharp time frame, so be careful with that and practice. Please practice a sample talk where you really keep attention to the actual time frame, and also try to use a test audience. You can use it for questioning afterwards whether they really got the point of the whole talk. So, yeah, that's what sample talk does for you, and it's quite often neglected, and you really, afterwards, you can see it, whether you have done something like that or not. Okay. Also, people often get the impression that you get a lot of slides done in the sparse time that you have. But you should really keep in mind that for an ordinary slide, you need 2 to 3 minutes in order to explain what is actually on the slide. If you don't need these 2 to 3 minutes, then it must either have been some kind of headline or something which is not important. Then you should consider yourself, is it really necessary to show the slide if you didn't need 2 minutes to explain it? So, yeah, that is the rough estimation for that. Yeah. Also, if you're not sure about how long it will actually take you, especially taking into consideration that you're probably quite nervous when you actually hold your talk, you can, of course, always prepare optional slides which you can switch to in the appendix in case you really finish with your talk 5 minutes early or 10 minutes early. Then you can always go to your appendix and have a kind of mini chapter prepared for these purposes. Of course, depends on your particular approach, what will be suited for something like that. But yeah, that would be a possibility. If you know yourself to be nervous in front of people, then that's the way to go for you. Okay, then the talk itself. You should try to talk freely and not try to read everything that is on your on the slides. It is also not a kind of slideshow in the sense of your holiday pictures that you just go through and say, let's see, we have this, and then we have this. You actually tell stories, so don't prepare a sequence of photos, so to say. You should also always be in sync with your central theme. That means you should be heading, focusing for these few particular main topics that you have found in the preparation phase, and should communicate everything in a kind of connected way, meaning you can use combinations like cause and effect for doing transitions, problem and solution, and maybe alternatives, but always give some kind of a reason why you're talking. Because if not, then the people might just wonder, what is this guy actually doing there? Then the other thing during a talk is you should consider previous knowledge. You can also communicate with the people in order to make sure that they have the knowledge that they need. You can ask whether people have already seen this kind of code before or whether they have already had contact with some of the measurements that you were dealing with. There's always ways to ensure that the audience is with you. Yeah. Apart from that, there's a few tricks that you can do in order to make sure that people stay attentive to your talk. Already body language. It's just a question of whether you're kind of sunk into yourself or whether you're actually giving them a posture that they can look at where they see this guy is not asleep. This might be also a motivation for myself not to be asleep. Then, of course, language needs to be practiced. If you're not so fluent in English, it's not a catastrophe, but you should actually try to speak with nice language. Yeah. Also, practice is something that really helps, because in actual talks, you might fight the urge to use just the German words for a specific topic. Yes?
Is it necessary to record this presentation in English, or can you do this in German?
Which level are you at? No, not in the language, but in your studies. I think for bachelor it's not necessary, but the masters should do their talks in English. So, are there any non-masters except for you two? Non-masters. Sorry?
Also bachelor.
Bachelor. Okay. Yeah. So for you, it's not necessary, but it would be a nice idea to train. And I will not downgrade you for doing mistakes in the language, because I myself am also no native speaker or something like that, but just talking in the language is a really good practice. And in an environment which is not which is quite student friendly, you should grasp every opportunity you get for people to help you and for you to have practice opportunities. But of course, I won't force you into something that you just don't like. Also, you can just use a kind of, yeah. If you just don't know a specific word, you can just give the German one and talk to the audience to translate it, for example. It also gives a connection to the audience. Same thing as before. There's a difference between masters and bachelors. So bachelors can be German, but yeah, the background literature is in English anyway, so it might be easier for you to do it in English. But you're not forced to if you're a bachelor. Yeah. I think we have exhausted the content of this part. Now, how do we create a decent paper? We have talked a little bit about what the topic is actually about, so that is, of course, the thing that matters the most. I'm not so much into the formalities of what your paper actually looks like, but whether it transmits a message. These core points that we've talked about, that's all you need to consider for a seminar. You have to have a message, and if you can sell this message, not in a marketing way, but in a way of transmitting knowledge to other people. People should go away from your talk and say, we've learned something today. And that's what you're aiming for. And that's what you also should aim for with your paper. You should have a clear message in a paper. If you then do your thing, that's okay. But it should be a message in there. And it should be a relevant message, of course. Yeah. Yeah, so for background work, especially for paper, it's important to talk about how you work with sources, especially as there have been lots of public fuss around people that didn't do something like that, and people get actually taken away their degrees if they haven't done that properly, so we should definitely talk about something like that. Sources should definitely be mentioned. It's not a bad thing for you to tell that you have not come up with the whole thing with, by yourself, but you have used some kind of source. The only thing is mention it. And even if you don't use the direct words, because that's something that's quite uncommon in computer science talks, there's no real necessity for citing the exact wording that the other one used, because you need most of the contents to explain something more simple or something like a little bit slightly different or something, and soon you won't have the exact wording. But still, you should give the reference to where you get this knowledge actually from, because if you use if you present a certain approach, you should give credit to these people. So, mention your sources. Then, next thing that you should ask yourself is my source trustworthy, reliable? And there's a lot of stuff out there, especially in the internet, of course, which is which we would call non-scientific sources. And yeah, there might be hidden gems in there that actually do educate people and actually provide information, but they are scarce. And a lot of them contain errors and mistakes, and you just can't rely that anyone has ever tried to proofread it. So in order to increase the chance for getting a proofread publication, you should probably consider the ones from the scientific box. Because in scientific magazines and conference proceedings, you can be sure that before this thing was actually allowed to be published, there has been a round where this specific paper has competed with other papers and has been read by other researchers of the same field and has been rated, whether it is actually something new or not, and whether it is correct or not. This just doesn't mean that it is actually correct. It just means that two or three people have actually paid some time in reading the whole thing and making up a mind for whether this thing was good or not. So it's still not a guarantee that it's error-free or even correct or something, but it has a higher chance because the other things actually are written and then posted and forgotten about. And most things are not corrected afterwards. So, yeah, be aware of the whole thing. It's considered better to use the ones from the green boxes. Especially in computer science, it's quite easy to find these things, these articles from scientific magazines and conference papers by researching your topics with DBLP, which is a kind of and central register for all the publications that are out there for computer science. So if you go to this URL, you can actually just type in the keywords that are relevant to you and then find publications. There's also overview papers which give you ideas about what are related works and all that. Anyway, a lot of the papers have a section that is called related work that should give you more citations from other things that are related to the things that you are interested in. And this might give you whole new ideas of where to go looking for the things that are actually relevant for you. So it's always a good idea to use these things if you are really up for explanations and backgrounds of things. Of course, and there's also Google Scholar, which is also quite nice, but follows a different approach, and it's not so, it is more related to Google's crawlers than somebody keeping the central register up to date, but also a possibility. And then, of course, there's a TUM library, which should be mentioned here, because this gives you access to a lot of the papers that you cannot find freely available. Luckily, in computer science, a lot of papers are hosted by the authors themselves, but there are a few who neglect these practices, and for these, you should go through the TUM proxies or the LRZ proxies, which have a subscription to a lot of the magazines and conference proceedings, so that they can give you as the students free access to these kinds of things. Okay. Yeah. Of course, I don't say that the non-scientific sources are generally bad. You can use them quite a lot in order to motivate or to get yourself an overview of what is out there. But as soon as you go deeper, you will reach the boundaries of these things quite easily. Okay. So the other things we have mentioned is, of course, we have talked about literature, so you should provide your paper with a literature list, literature register. You should structure your talk as well as your paper in a kind of similar way. You should demonstrate what the problem is by giving something which is either faulty or does not match with a certain property or it generates havoc in any way. That highly depends on your actual approach. And you should continue with solving the problem and evaluating the solution. In solving the problem, you explain how the algorithm is actually working on solving the thing that you have opened in demonstrating the problem. And then you have to evaluate. And then there comes the literature register, which has citations from all over your document, but probably the most from your related work section, where you can tell about alternatives to your specifically assigned topic. Yeah, you should be aware of the difference between own statements and citations, and also in indirect citations. And the thing that we have also talked about is quality of figures, be it that have some kind of fixed resolution, which has to be scaled somewhat, and this might probably render your figure unreadable. So be aware of that you have to do something in this respect, or even might it be that this kind of special figure is not suited for explaining especially your problem, and then you should kind of think of a different figure or a simplified figure or anything like that. For the form, I think I have not yet provided, but I will put online a link to templates for LaTeX or Word, even though that hurts. And I expect the whole thing to be done in whatever way you want to do it, but delivered in a PDF so that I can actually read it and also put my annotations in case that it is needed and send it back to you. Then we have talked about two versions of your paper. There was the extended abstract version and the final paper. The final paper is something that will evolve from the extended abstract, so not everything is lost that you do for extended abstract. This is the thing that you should hand out when you do your actual talk. It is limited with 3 pages and should give a rough overview together with the motivation and also clearly stated what your actual points are that you want to point out in your talk. So that's already all. And if you do that in a decent quality, you will probably already end up using all these 3 pages already. But of course, that's an upper limit on your page count. Together with the feedback that you get from the crowd and the thing that your advisor will tell you, you will then be able to concentrate on actually delivering your final version of the whole thing. If you get comments on that you should read deeper into that or this, then you can do so in the time that remains for you until you have to hand in your final paper, which is limited with 10 pages, contains the feedback, of course, and this time you should have the detailed explanations of these central concepts in there, which will in most cases mean that you will concentrate on the specific constraints in your area, on the details of the algorithm that is behind your approach, and then, of course, a critical evaluation, which hasn't been done in the extended abstract. Yeah. So I think we are reaching the end of the talk. There's a question still there.
Yes. What should be the minimum number of pages that you should do? Or what could you do? Is considered like, okay, that's enough for a paper, or should be enough if it's a good quality?
This is not a matter of a clear number, but a matter of the degree of details that you put in there. So in most of the cases, all the approaches that are topics for you have a lot of publications out there, which in general are at least 12 or 15 pages long each, and they have several of them. So there should be quite a lot of material that you would be, fighting against this upper limit in most cases. So I have never seen a paper less than 2/3 of the upper limit so far in events like this. But I won't give you a clear number because it's, of course, dependent on your actual topic. But giving something like the extended abstract as your final paper is, of course, something that is not enough. So you should have clearly more than the extended abstract. But it's actually determined by the content. If you don't deliver, you won't get anything really exciting afterwards out of the whole thing. Okay. But you can, of course, talk to your advisor during your work on the topic. Yeah, okay. So any other questions? Good. So then I think we'll take the discussion now offline because this is not so relevant for people who cannot interact. So thank you everyone for your attention and goodbye.